would it be late? Oh.
Mics are on, everyone. Good evening, everybody. Welcome to the Committee of the Whole meeting for Monday, January 14th, 2013. And we do have quite an agenda tonight, considering we haven't met since before the holidays, really. So, Happy New Year to everyone. My name is Rich Marks. I am the alderman, one of the aldermen from the 2nd Ward, and I will be chairing this meeting tonight. Let's note that all of the aldermen are here, except for Alderman Maladra and Alderman Dantino are both unable to attend tonight. First item of agenda is the consent agenda. There's only one item on that consent agenda, and that is to approve the Committee of the Whole minutes for the December 10th, 2012 meeting.
So move.
Second.
Moved by Alderman Singer, seconded by Alderman Hill. Any questions, comments? All those in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Anyone opposed? Unanimous for the people here. Next item of business, 4A, we have the, she's been doing this presentation for a few years now and running this event and getting it bigger and bigger every year. Carolyn, Mrs. Hill, if you want to, she's going to give a presentation on the 2013 Dancing with the Stars event.
Thank you. Thank you, Chairman Marks. My name is Carolyn Hill, and I'm the chairman for the Dancing with the Geneva Stars benefit. I want to thank you, Chairman Marks, Mayor Burns, and city staff, city council, for giving me the opportunity to introduce to you and to the public at home the Dancing with the Stars teams for 2013. I also want to tell you about some of the special features for this year's event. We will be celebrating our 5th year on February 9th. And like most 5-year anniversaries, we will be celebrating in a big way. It has been said that this event is one of the best fundraisers ever staged in this area. Last year, this benefit raised $20,557. The Geneva Cultural Arts Commission shared a percentage of the profits with the Geneva Academic Foundation, our partner. That figure includes $16,769 in votes raised by our teams. And our generous sponsors helped defray the $8,000 expenses necessary to produce this event. So with such a profitable benefit, the Cultural Arts Commission has been able to provide many events for the public's enjoyment, and the Geneva Academic Foundation has been able to increase their funds, which helps support our schools. Our 2011 benefit saw a change in the floor plan to accommodate 370 attendees. Everyone has a seat at a table. At the 2012 event, we added live feed to 2 screens so the entire show can be viewed and all of the dancers' moves can be seen even from the back of the room. 2 separate rooms for appetizer buffet and bars are available to eliminate standing in line for drinks and food. And these improvements will be implemented again this year. We really want to please our guests. Open seating is $40 per guest, which includes hors d'oeuvres, dessert, cash bar, and an evening of great entertainment. The 20 reserved tables at $550 for a table of 10 are spoken for, but we have plenty of open seating available. Over 2,000 invitations from the Academic Foundation and Cultural Arts Foundation database were mailed the end of December. But invitations, which include a reservation card and a vote card, are available at City Hall and the History Center. But the easiest way to make a reservation and to vote is to go directly to our website, which is www.genevaarts.org, and that's 1A between Geneva and Arts. Excuse me. You click on events, and then When the events come up, you go to Dancing with the Stars. Voting will continue until February 8th. $1 counts for one vote. And every year this event has sold out, so make your reservations early. The committee promises an evening of fun-filled entertainment with 12 local celebrities competing for your votes. We are celebrating our fifth anniversary by bringing back the past four champions. They will be giving a special performance. This is an opportunity to see some of your favorite past performers. Also new this year is a chance to win an iPad. For $10, you have a chance to play the heads-tail game and go home a winner. And finally, to end the evening of entertainment, there will be a twist dance-off, followed by an evening of open dance. The evening's program is emceed by our mayor, and Mayor Burns will be celebrating his fifth year with Dancing with the Stars emceeing. And now let's meet our 2013 performers. Well, I think you'll get to meet them. There we go. This first group that you see are the four past champions who will be giving a special performance. If you missed any of the past events, now is your chance to see the winners, starting with Laura Rush and Derek Swanson. They were our winners in 2012, just a year ago. Our 2011 champions, Dr. Peter Cladis and his wife, Jane. And our 2010 champions, Marsha and Harry Smith. And our very first event honored Tom and Mary Rogers, who were crowned 2009 champions. I'm really looking forward to watching them perform a special choreographed dance choreographed by Linda Cunningham, who is the founder and artistic director of the State Street Dance Studio. Our 2013 teams guarantee an exciting evening. And here's the first three. We have a trio of young athletic competitors. Some of them are triathletes. So, and our first, on the far left of the screen, we have Justin and Caitlin Edgar, and they own Edgar Allstate Insurance in Geneva. They're members of the Chamber of Commerce. They help sponsor and volunteer for many of the chamber festivals, including 60 Men Who Cook. They have raised money for the Illinois Food Bank. They enjoy running half marathons, hiking, and biking. The Edgars will be performing a swing. The couple in the middle, the people here, they should recognize them. We have Dorothy Flanagan and Sam Hill. That's senior 2013 team. Though Dorothy and Sam may not be able to keep up with running marathons and participating in triathlons, they are both energetic and enthusiastic about dancing the rumba. Dorothy has been a fourth year ward alderman for the past 19 years, and she co-chairs the Geneva Beautification Committee. This busy lady is also vice president of marketing and sales for Copia International, a software publishing company. Sam Hill is retired, and he really loves to dance. So Sam serves as first ward alderman and will have served 12 years this April. He previously served on the Geneva Plan Commission, the Geneva Park District Board, and he currently serves on the Park Foundation Board. Sam is also the city liaison with the Geneva Chamber of Commerce Board of Directors. In his spare time, he works part-time up at Pheasant Run Golf Course, and he golfs and loves spending time with his three grandchildren. And the far right screen, we have Adil and Kathy Jaffer. And they recently celebrated their 23rd wedding anniversary. Adil owns three Rosati Pizza establishments, and Kathy continues to work at home as a hairstylist. Both have been involved in volunteering at all of the schools that their two daughters attended since preschool. Most recently, they have been involved in the Viking Vendor, Homecoming, Theater Boosters, and Post-Prom at Geneva High School. They are also involved in Feed My Starving Children fundraisers. Kathy enjoys reading, photography, exercising, and golf, while Adil loves golf, sports, golf, gardening, golf, travel, and more golf. They enjoy dancing together and will be dancing the salsa. Our next group of three, on the far left, we have Mary and Kevin Kaiser, and they will perform the cha-cha. Kevin works as a process quality manager at Engineered Ceramics. Mary has been a social studies teacher at Geneva High School for 13 years, and she's one of the school's activity directors. Mary was recently awarded the 2012 Swim Coach of the Year by other professional swim coaches and her swimmers. Kevin and Mary also serve as robotics club mentors at Geneva High School. They enjoy triathlons, and this last year they successfully completed half of the Ironman competition. The Kaisers have two daughters, ages 8 and 10, who attend Williamsburg Elementary. Our middle couple, Eric and Elizabeth Ott, will entertain the audience on February 9th with a tango. They met in 2001 at a triathlon time trial while participating in some of their favorite activities, swimming, biking, and running. They have a one-year-old child. Eric owns Geneva Running Outfitters on State Street, and as owner of a downtown business, he became involved in the Geneva Chamber of Commerce. Elizabeth is currently a high school math teacher at York High School in Elmhurst. In their bio, they said, the best part about living in Geneva is the wonderful sense of community that everyone shares and the pride that residents take in their hometown. And on the right side of the screen, we have Steve and Lynn Saunders, who have been married for 25 years and have three children. Steve graduated from Geneva High School. They ran a local business for over 10 years. Currently, Lynn is the branch manager, assistant vice president at First American Bank in Geneva. Lynn and Steve have always been involved in the community. Lynn currently serves on the board of directors of the Chamber of Commerce and also is a board president for Community Contacts. Steve owns Saunders Real Estate Solutions, Inc., a non-traditional real estate company. Steve has served as past president of the Fox Valley Board of Realtors and was a member of the executive board of the Chamber of Commerce. When they take time to relax, Lynn enjoys exercise, yoga, and reading, and Steve likes a little more action. Spends his time swimming, running, and auto racing. And Steve and Lynn will grace the floor with a beautiful waltz. These teams all have something in common. They've all expressed their love for Geneva. All agree it's a warm, friendly community, and they enjoy Third Street, the restaurants, the bike trails, and all that Geneva has to offer. All of these teams have shown a competitiveness in wanting to win the competition with your votes. Each team will have received 8 lessons instructed by professional dance instructors in preparation for the February 9th event. I have visited these lesson sessions, and I can say with confidence that this is going to be a really exciting show. They have all been working hard to perfect their dance for your enjoyment. These photos are the courtesy of Megan Kelly Photography. So beat the winter blahs. You know, it's getting cold. You don't want to go out. But, you know, by February 9th, I think people should be feeling like, oh, it's time to get out of the house. So make your reservation and make it now before they're sold out. It'll be an evening of fun and excitement. Come and support your favorite dance team. You may even win an iPad. If you're unable to attend, you can support these teams, the Cultural Arts Commission, and the Geneva Academic Foundation, with your votes, either by mail or by visiting www.genevaarts.org. Thank you.
Thank you. Any questions? Sam, Dorothy, you going to win this year?
Yep. Is there a consequence if you don't win, Sam?
Yeah. Thank you so much. Appreciate it. Nice update. Next item on the agenda is 4B. It's a recommend draft resolution authorizing bid award and purchase of fire sprinkler system at Fire Station 2 from Fox Valley Protection LLC in the amount of $20,800.
Move approval.
Second.
Motion by Hill, second by Alderman Vogelsberg. Chief, do you have anything? Chief Olson, do you have anything you need to say, or pretty much what was in the packet? Anybody have any questions for the chief? Alderman Singer?
Yeah, thank you. It's a little difficult for me to understand why this product wanted. How the fire station is how old?
It's 16 years old, 17 years old.
17? It's interesting that when that product was first initially put in, the fire sprinkling system, that apparently met code.
Yes, it did.
And our hope is that are there other systems that are going into the community that will meet the standards that we so now expect them to meet?
Well, they all meet the fire prevention code at the time that they're installed. The type of material that was used back 16 years ago was such that there could be other buildings in town who are going to experience the same thing if they use the same type of pipe material.
I see. Yeah, that's rather disappointing.
The irony is not lost on me.
He would just like his vote taken.
Thank you, Chief.
Sure.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Any other questions, comments from the dais? Anyone from the audience? Seeing none, hearing none. All those in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? No, unanimous. Now it's to item 4C. It's a recommend draft resolution authorizing budget amendment in the amount of $2,800 for the fire station sprinkler system purchase.
So move.
Motion by Alderman Vogelsberg, second by Alderman Singer.
$2,800
is the budget amendment. Is okay, yeah. That's the amendment. It was budgeted for $18,000. Then we're gonna. It's a little over budget. Any other comments? Questions? Anyone from the audience? Hearing none, seeing none. All those in favor, say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Any opposed? Unanimous. Yeah. Item 4D, recommend draft resolution authorizing execution of agreement with Illinois Department of Natural Resources for Emerald Ash Bore Reforestation Matching Grant.
So moved.
Alderman Flanagan made the motion. Alderman Brown the second. Comments? Alderman Singer, questions?
Thank you. Danny, what is the definition of slippage?
Slippage.
Grant is exhausted. List will receive considerations.
What we're talking about there is we've applied for just about every grant we can for this because
right.
we are short money. This one actually, the $2,900 was kind of, they went through the list and that's kind of what was left after. Wow. And so we were able to get something. It's not what we requested, but we're getting something. We're hoping to bring back. We've got one other grant for about $10,000 that we're hoping to get, and we just got notice that there's another grant out that would be probably in that same neighborhood, $10,000. So when you look at a new tree is roughly $300.
Mm-hmm.
This gets us 10 with the 50-50 program that we have with our residents. Mm-hmm. It'll get us 20. So it's something
yeah.
to help get us back, putting trees back where we've been removing. And you've probably seen we're on our way of removing the trees. Now we got to start replanting.
Do you anticipate that by obtaining these additional funds that it might reduce the cost to the citizens to replant trees?
Not with the dollar amounts that we're looking at right now. If we were to get a larger sum, then we can look at that. But right now, I don't think it's enough to try to adjust it at this point.
While we're on the subject, is it permissible for me to ask how is the product going with reforestation and removing our ash borers? How are we doing?
As far as removals, we're over halfway now.
Halfway.
So if you recall, we had, I think, 2,800 roughly. Uh-huh. We're over halfway this winter. With it being as mild as it has, it's allowed us to continue with the removal. The good thing is we're pretty well caught up with, you got the removal, then you got to do the stump grinding, then you got to restore it with dirt and seed. And we've been able to get caught up in that regards. So we're doing well on the removals. Now we're focusing in on trying to get some funding for replacements. Replacement-wise, this is our first year that we did a spring planting and then another fall planting, and we're going to continue doing that as long as we get requests from residents for the 50-50 program.
Mm-hmm.
So that's been working, but we're still only planting maybe somewhere in 100 to 150 trees per spring and fall. So we might be planting 300, but we can remove a lot more. Mm-hmm. So we still have a long ways to go for replanting.
Yeah, certainly do. Yeah, there's articles recently in, I believe it was the Tribune or one of the local papers, regarding the great numbers of municipal areas in throughout the state that are really having difficulties with this issue of the ash borer and how costly it's going to be and how costly it is.
Right.
Yeah. So we're into that system right now. Thank you, Dan. Thank you, Mr. Sherman.
Thank you. Any other comments, questions? Anyone from the audience? No. Hearing none, seeing none. All those in favor, say aye.
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 Any opposed? Unanimous again. Next item on the agenda is item 4E, recommend draft resolution approving pilot test program of AMED filtration system at the water treatment facility at cost not to exceed $19,900.
Move approval.
Motion by Alderman Hill.
Second.
Second by Alderman Kilburg. Floor is yours.
I would just like to mention that Chris Martell and Mark White are here with from CDM Smith to also answer any questions that you may have.
Questions? I think the packet was pretty self-explanatory in this matter. It's a test project. We'll see how it goes. Any questions from the audience? No. Hearing none, seeing none. All those in favor, say aye.
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 Any opposed? No opposed. Motion passes unanimously. Item 4F, recommend draft resolution authorizing engineering agreement with Walter E. Dushler for River Lane sewer flow monitoring at a cost not to exceed $38,500.
So moved.
Motion by Alderman Brown, seconded by Alderman Singer. Comments, questions for Superintendent Van Gescam?
Have we had complaints in this particular item?
Not complaints, but more just personal knowledge that this is an area that we do have to pump from in severe rains. So before the road gets redone, we want to look at making sure that our bases are covered and that if we do need to increase the size of the sanitary sewer in that area, we do so.
Thank you.
Was this what contributed to the flooding at the Harrington 4 or 5
no.
years ago?
No, this is different. This is sanitary sewer where...
But I mean, was it related in any way to
no.
that?
No.
Okay.
Any other comments, questions? Anyone from the audience?
Nope.
All those in favor then, say aye.
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 Any opposed? Unanimous, so far so good. Next item on the agenda is 4G. Recommend draft resolution authorizing contract with Bollinger Lock and Associates, Inc. for East State Street Phase 2 engineering services at a cost not to exceed $909,252.52.
So moved.
Motion by Alderman Vogelsberg.
Second.
Second by Alderman Hill. Nothing. It's a big project. This is the big one.
Definitely no small change.
No.
So basically the agenda item is to seek approval for engineering consulting services for the phase two portion of the East State Street project. I know someone had asked about the possibility of showing a location map, so I believe we...
Thank you. I was the one who asked Pam. So.
All right. So the location, the project's for East State Street reconstruction, and it would run from Bennett to just shy of Kirk. It's the orange line. It involves basically putting in a middle turn lane, some improvements at the intersections, widening, improving the streetscape. There's a typical section on the next slide right there, where you can see the existing is just the two lanes in each direction, and then we're proposing this middle lane. We do have phase one approval from IDOT. This portion is the phase two, which is the design. Phase three is the actual construction. So right now we're in the phase two portion. And the consultant we chose from a selection process is Bollinger Lock. And we do have a representative from them here who would be the project manager, Dan Bruckelmeyer. So if you want him to come up, I'm sure he'd be happy to say a few words.
How's everybody doing?
Fine, thank you.
I just want to point out that in addition to the improvements Pam mentioned, there's also going to be about 4,100 lineal feet of water main improvement, as well as sanitary sewer improvements, basically to improve the infrastructure underground. There's also three traffic signals that need modernization, 22 side streets, and over 60 access points. So it's quite a challenge, but you know, we're really looking forward to hopefully making the east side look like the west side. So that's the main goal of the project. We've got quite a team assembled, as you know, with city officials leading the team. We've also got Lannert involved with the landscaping and streetscaping elements from in town here. We've got Ames Engineering to do lighting upgrades ourselves, and we've got geotechnical consultants involved, and we're really looking forward to this challenge.
Alderman Brown.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I notice this is funded over 3 years. Does your work involve the question of the order in which things are done and how much is done each year? And
I believe the way that we broke it out is we broke it out according to city fiscal year, just from the funds that are available. Typically, a job of this size and length is approximately an 18 to 24-month process. One of the main components that isn't included with this is the process of actual acquiring of the land to do some of the widening. So I think it's important to know that we can have our plans done easily within the time frame we've established, but the time frame for actually letting the project out to bid, it's pending funding and completion of land acquisition activities. But I know Dan and Pam have been working along with the city council to try and attain funding from the state.
So it's likely that none of the construction starts until after the next two fiscal years.
Yeah, that's definitely the case, because it's going to take 2 years to get the plans designed and then get approved and get all the necessary permits that we need from the Illinois Environmental Protection Agency, from the Water Reclamation Districts, basically everybody who's involved. It's a long process, and you're going to end up with a nice brick full of about 300 pages to go basically hang somewhere, and it's quite a challenge. There's, I think, we estimated about 228 cross sections which means there's basically, you know, every 50 feet as you go, you got to take a picture of what it's going to look like through. So, I mean, it's quite the engineering effort, but it's one that us in the city are looking forward to.
I presume that in your work you also include the questions of how do you maintain public access through the area during the construction and what the correct order of things is such that you minimize the disruption to the tens of thousands of cars that go through there every...
Yeah, one of the biggest challenges that's going to face this project is the maintenance of traffic. That's what we call it, maintenance of traffic. And basically, we figure it's going to happen over a three-stage process with various sub-stages that are going to accommodate a lot of the vehicles and a lot of the things that we're looking at. Granted, we haven't begun the design yet, but you know, we've got a lot of conceptual ideas that we presented during our interview with the city. And some of those are going to be, you know, restricting left turns during peak travel hours because you're going to be down from, you know, to two lanes from four lanes, things like that. You know, we realize the ADT is, which is average daily traffic, is well over 20,000. It's only projected to grow. So it's important that this project gets completed, you know, within the next, you know, few years because traffic's going to grow and there's going to be more people making left turns. And, you know, as Pam shows on the typical section up there, you can see what they're proposing to do. There's also a bike path. I forgot to mention that. A big part of this project is providing pedestrian connectivity and bringing everything up to what's in the industry referred to as PROAG, which stands for Public Right-of-Way Access Guidelines, making sure that there's detectable warnings at all pedestrian crossings, things like that. Providing it at major intersections, providing safe push-button pedestrian crossings and things like that, things that necessarily aren't really present right now. That's a big component of this job.
Well, hopefully that won't discourage people too much from driving through our town, because even though I'm one of the people who gets caught in the traffic every day, I think having access through town be reasonably easy is a good thing for our downtown. Can't drive through this town without liking it. So hopefully we can do this without causing people to form new commuting patterns. Thank you.
Alderman Singer, I think
yes,
you have
thank you.
Comments.
I think my question might be more directed either at Pam or Danny.
I see that we're not to exceed a $909,000 cost, and part of that is that there's a $400,000 from the TIF funds. Is that part of the $909,000 at $400,000? Is IDOT coming forward with any other fundings at all?
No. We've gotten no indication from them that they would help fund this project for the engineering portion.
Okay. I suspect we did approach them.
We've had numerous conversations with them, and I believe typically they're bringing up the budget struggles that they're having, and they really don't have money. They can't even afford to pave their roads is what they told us. So at this time, although there's hope for possibly construction funds, uh-huh, there just would not be money for the engineering.
Yeah. Thank you, Pam. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Mary, did you have?
Yeah, just as a point of information for the council, we did budget $400,000 this year for this project. I don't expect that we will probably be paying out very much, if any, this fiscal year. We'll see. Depends on how quickly we move. But we do have funds budgeted in case we do need to do that. But I was just working with staff today, as a matter of fact, on this issue, and we are looking at putting about half of the cost of the contract into next fiscal year's budget, and approximately half of the cost will come out of the TIF fund. So about half will come out of general and about half, or possibly MFT if we wanted to use it in that fashion, but half approximately general fund and half TIF. So.
I had a question. We're looking at 2016, then, if I interpret this information, is probably the a point in time where we might actually commence with the project?
Well, as Dan mentioned, one other component to it will be acquiring the right-of-way. There are some parcels that we need to acquire, and a lot of it will be contingent upon how quickly we can get that done.
So I guess my question was, is the earliest that we might commence with this would be 2016?
That would be correct.
Okay. And then I had another question. How do you deal with cut-through traffic when you undertake such a project, especially when you have residential neighborhoods so close to a state highway like that? One of the two of you can address that. Do communities ever redirect traffic to one way to prevent entry to certain streets?
A lot of times what we'll do is maybe where there's like residential blocks is we may temporarily close in the interim one that has a rear connection to another. Another is to promote you don't really want to promote cut-through traffic. What you try to do is restrict it through enforcement, through signage, things of that nature, because obviously you're not going to want...
I don't think we want to promote it. I think we want to limit it.
Yeah, you definitely do, but at the same time, you got to be cognizant of the fact that, you know, people that are making left turns when you're only having two lanes of traffic, one lane in each direction, it's going to back traffic up. So, you know, we have to be cognizant of that, and there's different things that we do to try and maintain the traffic flow and avoid cut-through traffic, especially some of the bigger trucks, because this is a designated truck route, and we definitely don't want large commercial vehicles traveling down residential roads, and a lot of times we'll put up signs, and we'll have to work with the city through enforcement of those measures.
Thank you. Alderman Flanagan.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Going to the truck issue, I guess, wouldn't they do a truck bypass or something? Wouldn't they actually take and move 38?
It's possible. I mean, that's definitely one of the things that we'll look into, is looking to, you know, reroute trucks to a state route to the south,
right,
or to the north. And that's something that we would definitely look into. We'd have to coordinate that with IDOT, though, because ultimately they have the say on whether we can put detour signs within their right-of-way. But ideally that would be, you know, the best-case scenario, and we could also work with Kane County as well to find out if we can use any of their roads.
I didn't realize that there were 22 side streets, or is that what you're meaning, intersections? Or?
Yeah, 22 side streets intersect East State Street from Kirk down to the Fox River. You know, some of them are T intersections. I think there's only a few that are actual four quadrant intersections, but
and each of those intersections will be affected or have some sort of improvement made to it?
Yeah, we typically, unless it's in really bad shape, we would go back to the curb return. So as you go around the corner and when the, you know, intersecting corner stops. Again, there was a phase one that has been performed that's available. Is it still available on your website? I'm not real sure.
No, because I think that was on the bidding.
Okay. There's a phase one that was performed by another engineering consultant where they've proposed a lot of these ideas. So, and IDOT has looked at these and approved these as well as the city. So we're going to work off that as a base and then, you know, add our ideas into it as well. But the other point is the fact that we have over almost 60 various commercial and residential accesses, and typically what you would do in that situation is you would put down some sort of a stone for vehicles to access. There will be no closures of any kind. People will always be able to get on their side streets. People will always be able to get to their homes or businesses. It's just, you know, construction. Everybody knows what construction's like. But at the end of the day, the product will be worth it.
I did have another question on the you mentioned that IDOT wasn't going to contribute to the engineering. But yet, are they going to be resurfacing 3rd Street, 38? Not 3rd Street, 38?
This section of it?
Yeah, I mean, is any of 30, it has to be, right? It has to be resurfaced.
We've asked them if there's any possibility that they could help contribute to the construction cost. And that's been up and down, but the last conversation we had with them, we felt they did give us positive indication that there is some possible opportunity in the future that they could contribute to the construction. That would be our preference, is that they manage the project and construct it. So we definitely would encourage all of you to contact your representatives and put a good word in for Geneva and East State Street, because that probably has more, I guess, influence on whether or not we get funded than Dan and I going to meet with them. So definitely say something.
And the 400K that Mary mentioned, does that include the acquisition monies that you're going to use out of that fund, or is it a totally different fund that we're
going to
use?
That's different. That's right now, this is just the phase two engineering.
Okay.
That we're
so there's no acquisition money attached to
correct.
Any of whatever we're looking at.
That's correct.
That leads me to just ask about the noise wall. I guess I don't remember seeing anything, and I can't remember where Glengarry condos are.
Right
across
by the McDonald's.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. So there's that fenced area?
The moment is just bushes.
No
fence.
I'm sorry.
Right? Just,
you live there.
Is that correct? It's just bushes at the moment.
Yeah. I couldn't remember, and I was trying to look at it, and I couldn't find it.
That's correct. There's no noise wall there now. What I understand is that during the public outreach in phase one, several, maybe one or two people had...
Yeah, they're right up there.
They had expressed a concern over the noise. And so that's pretty typical to put in the possibility of looking at a noise wall. We were not sure that residents would actually want to go down that road, so that would probably be something we continue to dialogue with, not start design until we're absolutely sure, because although it could possibly reduce the noise, you would have a wall there when you look out your window, your door, and that's not always something people want either. So we definitely don't want to start down the road saying we're definitely putting a noise wall in before we can go back and talk to those residents and make sure.
Thank you, because I was trying to picture that, and I couldn't figure out where it was at. So.
That's not there now. That brings up another point is one of the strengths of this firm, and one of the reasons that we thought that they would be the best candidate for this job, is they have a strong public relations and outreach component in their firm. They have someone dedicated just to that who has a strong track record. So we definitely want to engage the residents. That's critical for the success of this project. We want to hear what they have to say and work with them throughout the entire design. Definitely during construction, but it's just as important in design. So I'm sure Dan can talk more about that part of their firm, but it's just outstanding. So for Geneva, we wanted something like that. We definitely thought that that would be an important part of the project.
And just kind of a side note, the design really, I think it would really help that whole flow with that center island.
It definitely would.
I mean, I've traveled down that way a number of years already, and so, you know, any kind of design element or any type of better flow or traffic flow would be godsend. Of course, you know, you always have to have the fertilizer before you have the pretty flowers, so, and that's the construction element of it, so.
Alderman Singer, I believe you had another
question. Yes, thank you. I have a concern that the aldermen that represent that area are going to be inundated with a great number of complaints from the residents that are living in that immediate area. Are you going to provide a toll-free number in which these residents can begin to question your needs or their needs, and someone who would be labeled as a project engineer or whatever it might be?
Well, during design, what Pam was saying is that we actually have a designated public information representative.
I did hear that.
And so we're going to have a website. It's going to be up during design. We're going to hold, I believe, two different public meetings, and we're also going to go door-to-door and meet with each of the business owners and residents just to kind of explain to them what we're looking to do, hear their concerns, because it's one thing to look at a topographic map and say, you have a problem. Mm-hmm. And it's another thing entirely to talk to somebody who's been operating a business there for 20 years, and what we may perceive to be a problem isn't a problem. It may be something totally different.
Right.
Now, I think what you're referring to is actually when it goes to construction, and that's not really part of our scope of work. We'll keep the website active and everything like that, but once IDOT kind of takes the job away and they run with the construction, they've got their own entities.
Yes.
But through a strong public outreach program, we try to reduce the amount of, I don't want to say complaints, but we reduce a lot of the concern that a lot of the residents have, because we've involved them with the project, and we've spoken with them and heard their concerns and tried to adopt those into the plans. And on the website, we'll have strip maps, and we'll have various elements, things like this, more detailed, obviously, though, because it'll be more of a final engineering design. And, you know, we've done this on a number of projects throughout the Chicago area, and we find that by the time it goes to construction, the more people know, the better, so they're not surprised, especially when it comes to maintenance of traffic. When are things going to be closed, things of that nature. I know in other jobs, when we've actually gone into construction, we've done things like Twitter campaigns where we'll say, hey, by the way, you know, this road is going to be down to one lane today. Consider using an alternate route just for this day. By the end of the week, it'll be open. Or, hey, you know, we're going to be cutting open this part of the street to install new water main services. And we found that that is a tremendous buy-in with the public. We find that especially when you're doing a lot of residential commercial rehab, that when owners are notified about things ahead of time, they can plan ahead, especially with some of the medical facilities that are, you know, we've got the, you know, the funeral home, and we've got the senior living home, and we've got Delnor Cadence just down the road. So having them be involved is a very important aspect of the project too, because we have to plan while it's under construction. You know, fire, emergency vehicles, they need to be notified at all times as to, you know, what's going on. But generally in the phase two portion of the project, you're just trying to educate and involve. It's when phase three comes into play. And if IDOT manages that, then IDOT will have their own way of doing things.
I imagine that this information will be accessible on our Geneva website as well, and that you will certainly also get the information out to the local newspapers in the community so they have access to this information.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, most times when we'll go into design, we'll have a link directly through the City of Geneva's website to the project website. Uh-huh. Where people can click. There'll also be a mailing list that people can sign up for where they can receive email updates. Any public information notices will go through Pam and Dan, and it'll go to you know, the various local newspapers. Anything big will publish in a larger circulation newspaper. So, I mean, we do our homework, and we really know how to get the public involved. And, you know, I mean, there's been many Saturdays and Sundays where I've been out knocking on doors, talking to people, saying, you know, here's what we're thinking about doing. You know, what do you think about maybe instead of surrendering this 10 feet of property permanently, what if we put a retaining wall up? You know, that we could reduce the costs for the city in the need for that project. And maybe somebody doesn't want that in front of their yard, but we don't know. I mean, that's something we got to engage the residents on.
Well, that sounds good. We'll be counting on you.
Looking forward to it.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Welcome. Anyone else from the dais? Anyone, any comments, questions from the audience? Hearing none, seeing none, I guess we have a motion and a second. So all in favor of moving this project forward, say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye.
Any opposed? Unanimous. There we go. Now we are on item 4H, and that is a recommended draft ordinance approving text amendments to the Geneva zoning ordinance to allow electronic message boards for non-residential use in residential zoning districts. Mr. DeGroot.
Good evening.
The floor is yours.
Just wanted to provide a kind of a quick summary of the request. Back in October of 2011, we adopted a comprehensive rewrite of the sign regulations in the city. As part of that rewrite, we added in a new provision that allows for electronic message board signs. They previously were not allowed at all in any zoning district, so we took a very measured approach, allowed them to take up only half the sign area of freestanding signs only. We don't allow scrolling or flashing displays. We allow the frequency of the message to change up to twice a day. So the real intent was to embrace the new technology, to replace the traditional changeable copy signs where you're out there putting up letters and taking them down, but not to create television monitors in our commercial corridors. So we adopted that provision and allowed them in commercial districts and industrial districts outside of the historic district only, but did not allow them in residential zoning districts. We have since been approached by Faith Lutheran Church, They want to replace their existing changeable copy sign with an electronic message board sign. We've had inquiries from other churches and schools over the last couple of years as well. So Faith Lutheran has applied for a text amendment to allow them in residential districts for non-residential uses only. So that would include churches, schools, recreational facilities, cemeteries, and that's about it. So staff took another look at our regulations and to see if they were appropriate for residential zoning districts. We did an inquiry to the Planning Advisory Service and compared our regulations to those of communities across the country. What we found was that many communities will adopt stricter regulations for residential districts for these type of signs, limiting the frequency of display, no flashing, no scrolling, limiting the size of the signs. And what we found was those regulations are right in line with what we already have in place. And taking a look at what we have in place, that monitored approach to really replace that changeable copy sign, restricting it any further would kind of eliminate the practical use of an electronic message board sign. So staff has recommended approval of the requested text amendment to allow these in residential zoning districts for non-residential uses. The Plan Commission did as well at their meeting in December. We have a representative of the church here tonight, too. I believe he wanted to
pull up the picture.
Sure,
absolutely.
Use the arrow keys to go up and down.
If you could just introduce yourself, please, so we.
Hi, Pastor Steve Oakpies, pastor of Faith Lutheran Church in Geneva, which started its worship services in this room. So, this sign has come as a donation, a special gift during our 50th anniversary by the family that used to own and operate the Geneva Hardware Store in the 1960s, and so it has kind of a historical aspect to it. I just wanted to thank everyone for looking at this issue again, and I know that I'm sure you worked hard to get all of that done before, and part of this goes on my sign salesperson, who I told I can't have an LED sign, and she said you really ought to ask before you spend $16,000 on your sign and make sure, because if somebody else gets it 2 years from now, you're going to have to go back to your church and explain to them why you didn't petition the city. So that's part of the reason why I'm here, and I wanted to make sure that you really thought this through. I do thank David for the comments he made, and I wanted to put it up because with the current restrictions that you have, which means you can change it twice a day, this is what the sign will look like. If you're lucky, once a year, you will drive by the sign and actually see a change during the 5 seconds that it can change, because it will only change up to twice a day. That is part of your restriction. So I know that some people have been making comments about it's going to change and flash and look like it's moving. That's almost impossible with the restriction of it changing twice a day. For our use, most likely we would have a change at 6 a.m. So if you drove by it going to work, you'd see one message, and we might have a change again in the afternoon at 4 p.m., and you might see a different message going back from work. So that's kind of, you know, what you have in place, and I think that's, you know, wise as you put those restrictions together. So all those ideas of, and it's going to flash and change and distract drivers, that's really not an issue with those current regulations in place. The other aspect that I'd like to just make sure that you understand, which I learned as I did research on this, because we did look at this 8 years ago, which we already replaced our sign, and it's falling apart, and the paint's chipping off, and it's hard to get the materials that will last for a lifetime. And so this time we've gone to a company and said, we want a lifetime warrantied sign. We want this to be the last sign that we get at Faith Lutheran Church. That was another reason why the committee said you better get in there and ask for the LED sign, because we don't want to have to do this again with the lifetime material sign. And so we approached that, and we did our research. And so when you look at that sign, out of that 40 square feet, the LED portion is only 13 square feet. And if you're going to get a nice, you know, name of the organization on the top and the other things in there, most of them aren't even going to get up to the 20 square feet, because you don't have a lot left And since you don't allow the whole sign, you can't put the name of the organization in the LED portion. And so other places that might get this also will probably end up falling in that 13-square-foot sign range. It's big enough to put up three lines of text. You can go up to a 7-inch letter and get two lines of text. To go to the next step, you'd add another 6 or 8 inches, you know, to the sign to get another line, which almost gets to be unnecessary because then you could have four messages up there at once. But one or two places might do that. You might see that at the Geneva Pool. I want to put that out there, too, that it isn't just about the churches, but if you see something like the pool and the different classes they offer and the other things that they're doing for the community, and how they have those special movie nights and things, it would be really nice for them to have a sign that could change with all the different programs that they have and remind parents when the swim lessons are, and you'd know when the open swimming is and all the different things that they could be putting up there. There would be more service to the community than just the things that churches would be able to do. The other big point I wanted to make sure you understand is that these signs now all have sensors, and the sensors automatically adjust the amount of light that is outside, which means if it's a bright sunny day, of course, it increases the illumination so you can still read the sign, but if clouds come over it, it starts to decrease the illumination to match the light according to what's out there. So you basically get the same amount of light to your eye. It's balanced according to how your eye is reacting to the light that's outside. So at night, of course, it decreases quite a bit because you can see it a lot more at night. So it won't be as bright as some of the older signs that you might have seen back, the ones that are stuck in the days of they only have orange color. If they still have orange or red, they're the older signs because the color technology hadn't come out yet. So this won't look like that. It's full color. It's all optical wiring. It has no light bulbs. There's no sections of the sign that can be out, so it wouldn't have, like some of those older ones, you know, the little light bulbs could go out and you'd only see half the letter unless you got out there and unscrewed them all and changed that. These are beyond that, so they always look good. The only thing that can happen is one of the actual panels, their one-foot panels, could break, and then you'd have a gap where you'd have to replace that. But all of those things that might make the sign look ugly are not there. I just want to put it up there also because I drove around town, too, and I looked at some of the bigger signs that had the big 6-inch black letters that are going across, and I kind of took a look at those, and then I looked at this sign on my computer, and I asked myself which one actually looks better, and I felt a nice color LED sign looks better than three rows of black letters going across the screen. And so as you're moving this forward and looking at, you know, the vote at the actual council meeting, you might want to drive by a few and think, but I'd like to see a nice color picture and some letters, or I want to see those big black rows going across because they don't look as good as the color aspect of that. And that's another thing as far as people or organizations and churches looking to do ministry to the communities. You know, we're in the residential districts because our purpose is to serve the residents of the community. And so you don't see churches buying up the downtown strip and, you know, all up and down, and that's not where you have your schools because you need land for some of the activities and things. And so the parks, the schools, the churches are continuing to operate in those residential districts, but we still need to communicate to the community, and we appreciate the same opportunity to use this new technology to be able to update for the ongoing programs and the changes. And things are always changing at churches. You know, you do one thing on Sunday, you do something totally different on your youth and kids night, and then you have a special event on the weekend. Already had our school come and said, Pastor, are we going to get to use the sign? I said, I don't know. They have to vote for it first. But, you know, the school has special events and open houses and things, and they'd like to put some things up there also and communicate with the community the opportunities that are going on in the ministry that's right there to serve them. So are there any questions? I just kind of do kind of open dialogue there. Do you have any questions about it?
Alderman Singer?
Yes, thank you. What I'm seeing around the screen, that's similar to what you have up there. First of all, the Faith Lutheran Church, is that going to be illuminated?
That section would have a fluorescent light bulb enclosed, and it's so it would be lit from the inside out, and then the white would come through. So you'd see some color, and then it would make the white just slightly brighter, and so that would be illuminated, but slightly different than the optical wiring technology. Mm-hmm.
Now, what I have on my screen here is that the cabinet size is 5 by 8, and then it's four lines of 6-inch tracking. Is that what you're planning to put up, this, what I have on my screen here?
Do you have rows of black letters?
Yes.
That's what it would look like if you vote no. I gave you an example because I think the big black...
Oh, I see. This is one that is not illuminated.
I don't...
Did you hit the arrow button down?
Arrow button down.
Oh, I see. Yeah.
I gave you an example of this is what the current code would allow. This is what I went to my sign person and said, this is what I can get.
Right.
And she said, please reconsider the LED. And so if you voted no, that is what we get because that meets code. And my request is to get the LED sign because I think it looks better. It's easier to change the new technology. You can wirelessly change it now up to 400 feet. So the cost of running a wire under the parking lot has now been removed, which also makes it more feasible for the other organizations that would be able to, you know, communicate with their sign under that 400-foot limit. And there is always, in our community, there's icing issues to the changeable letters. You remember the ice storm we just had? Well, I don't know if I can even go in there and change it now unless we get over 32 degrees or I go out there with a torch. Oh, actually, it's usually hot water. You have to go out there with a bucket of hot water and dump it on your sign so you can actually get the letters out. So there are, you know, it's not as easy to change the changeable letter signs as people might think.
Is it going to be visible from both sides?
Yes.
Okay. Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Alderman Hill, I believe.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Well, Pastor Steve, you've really done your homework.
Yes.
I live south of Caneville Road and just within walking distance of your church. But last night I didn't walk. It was a little bit too chilly, and drove around the sign and into your parking lot just to see what it would look like. And then I've read the responses from your neighbors that are in the first ward, which is the ward that Alderman Brown and I represent, on the south side of Caneville, not on your side, unfortunately.
Okay.
But the people who have endorsed this sign that you're proposing are key residents of Caneville Road right there in that area across the street from you. And as far as I'm concerned, if they're all for you, I am too, and I think it'll look great.
I appreciate
good
that.
Job.
I guess I should clarify that too. I decided I better ask my neighbors what they think because I didn't want them here, you know, debating it with me. And I was surprised at their response. They said, we'd like to have a nice sign that looks good, you know, where the paint's not chipping off, that has lifetime materials. And the nice thing about the LED is it always looks good. It doesn't get old, it can't mold, it can't get, you know, it can maybe get a little bit dirty, you know, but some of the issues you have with the changeable letters, they scratch over time and different things that actually decrease the quality of the sign, where this would have less, you know, to do that. And they were very supportive, all of the neighbors. I went to the four neighbors that could see the sign from their front porch,
mm-hmm.
Just to get a feel for what they would think. And they weren't just, yeah, Pastor, I'll write you a letter. They were excited about a new sign that would look good.
It pleases me that you went to the effort of confronting this issue with the neighbors, because that oftentimes mm-hmm. is where you'll get the most complaints.
Right.
Any other questions? It sounds like you've had quite an education process since.
I have. I've learned a lot about signs.
Did you expect that when you were in college?
No. I've learned that you need a building administrative degree, and you probably need a legal degree, but it's hard to get all that in and actually get out there, too. So they come as you serve.
David, I have just one quick question for you. You know, we're making text amendments instead of a special use. Is that just because we've had that many requests, or is this just the easiest way to handle
it? We have had inquiries in the 4 years that I've been here from other churches in the community. At the time, they weren't allowed, and they didn't pursue the text amendment. And really, in this case, if you allow it for one, if we were to allow it by a sign variation or something, you're probably going to have an increase in the number of requests.
Okay. Alderman Flanagan.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, which leads me to the next question. The Historic District does not allow?
The amendment as proposed would not include properties in the Historic District.
Would this not open that up?
No, this would not.
Okay.
Alderman Hill.
Thank you, Alderman Flanagan, for bringing that up, because I think that we do have some retail operations in the historic district who would, I know one a couple of years ago really wanted to do this, and their sign is so high, and they've got to stand on a ladder in this kind of weather to make any changes. And, but it's in a historic district and prohibited. I would like to see an attempt to get a change so that we could accomplish something like this in the historic district without tarnishing the appearance of the district. I think it's possible, and maybe Pastor Steve is the leader in showing us what can be done. Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Any other comments, questions from the audience? You know, I never got a motion or a second on this, so we need to go
back. Move approval.
Motion by Alderman Hill, second by?
Seconded.
Alderman Gilmer. Are there any other comments, questions, audience? All right. You really?
No, don't.
Did you want me to say
no,
that?
No, please don't.
All those in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? There is none. It is unanimous. Just so you know, the final action on this will actually be taken next Monday night at the City Council meeting. It will be on the consent Tuesday night. Excuse me. Thank you. It will be on the consent agenda since it was unanimous. So unless someone removes it from the agenda, it will just be lumped into one. All of the votes for that night is one vote. But just so that you're aware, there is still one more possible hurdle, but so you're aware of that. We'll move on to the next item on the agenda, and that is 4I, which is recommend authorization to conduct Planning Commission public hearing on city-initiated text amendments to zoning ordinance regarding restrictions of bank and office uses in ground floor spaces in B2 Business District.
So moved.
Was that?
I'm sorry, yes.
Alderman Flanagan made the motion.
Second.
Second by Alderman Singer. Avon, you probably have a little presentation before we get
into questions. Yes, I have about 50 slides to get through.
Oh, good.
But I won't spend more than 5 minutes on each one.
So is this the guy we hired for years?
You hired him.
I thought this was just consideration to give it to the planning
commission. I promise to go through them quickly. If you'll recall, we had a policy discussion back in October on this topic. So the purpose of tonight's presentation is to kind of present what we've accomplished since we received direction in October. So we're going to we're presenting proposed text amendments to the ordinance to restrict bank and office uses on the ground floor in the B2 district, and then text amendments regarding the treatment of existing bank and office uses on the ground floor if that restriction were to be put in place. Again, we're not requesting a recommendation tonight. We're just requesting your authorization to bring this to the public for their input, and then eventually conduct a Planning Commission public hearing. So quickly, I'll just recap our planning objectives and policies that kind of brought this proposed change forward. Briefly discuss the purpose and importance of the proposed change. Summarize the discussion we had back in October, and then present our revised study area and recommendations, and then open it up for discussion. So our current planning policies and objectives, it goes back 10 years now to 2003 with the comprehensive plan, where we initially started looking at encouraging retail uses on the ground floor in the B2 district. And then that was reinforced in 2007 with the strategic plan for 2017. This was focusing more on the core area between 1st and 4th Street, but that has stayed in the plan with the amendments that take place every year. And then most recently with the downtown master plan to encourage retail sales generating businesses to locate in the ground floor. Again, why this is important is because we're really trying to strengthen the downtown as our central business district. There's not really an exact formula of the mix of uses, but we do know that a successful downtown always has a strong retail core and a critical mass of continuous activity. We know that customers will walk up to a quarter of a mile as long as there is that continuity of storefronts. We know that vacant storefronts, blank walls, parking lots, and buildings with non-retail uses create gaps in that continuity or retail dead zones. With the downtown master plan, we had a market analysis that was done, and that showed that we have a surplus of office space in the downtown, and that we have an unmet demand for retail uses like food and beverage stores, general merchandise, and limited service restaurants. And then our economic development department keeps track of vacancies in the downtown area. Right now we have a little over 20% of vacancies with our office space, but less than 10% with our retail space. So it's important if we have available retail space on the first floor to encourage retail space in those, or retail uses in those spaces. I don't know if anyone's familiar with walkscore.com, but it's a website. You can enter any address in America, and it gives you kind of a numerical walkability score for that address. And it's based on your proximity to a mix of different uses like shopping, groceries, entertainment, schools, etc. So I just typed in 3rd Street and West 8th Street, that intersection, and we get a B, 82 out of 100, a very walkable area. But if you, they have a street smart feature, if you put that on, that takes into account the number of intersections within that area, the length of your blocks. If you have short blocks, your score goes up. So we really do have a very walkable downtown based on that. On that website scoring, a walker's paradise, as they put it. So that's why it's important to kind of protect what we have. I think the city has acknowledged in our planning objectives and policies over the last 10 years that we have a walkable retail environment, and we want to make sure it stays strong and continues that way. So back in October, that's what staff heard from the Committee of the Whole. Our initial proposal was to place this restriction on banks and offices for the entire B2 district. The direction we received was to maybe consider a smaller geography than the entire district. And then we received direction regarding the existing banks and offices that we have on the first floor, that we would essentially grandfather them in, allowing them to expand or make site improvements, or if the space went vacant, they could lease that to another office or bank use. So I'll just begin by covering kind of the revised area. We started with this with the entire B2 district that you see here. The first areas that we kind of chopped off of the study area was everything east of the river, because we have the extreme slope conditions there. We have kind of a lack of adequate parking. You already have the separation from the rest of the downtown with the river. It didn't make sense to place the restriction in that area. And then everything west of 7th Street is kind of a transitional zone from the residential neighborhoods along State Street to the west into the downtown area. That's a closer view of the revised study area. Then we took a closer look at properties that front on West State Street or North or South 3rd Street only. We eliminated side streets from the study area. So we were contemplating placing the restriction only on properties that front State or 3rd Street. Then we took it a step further and looked at the actual building footprints on those properties. And what we wanted to do with those footprints was then look at each tenant space in those buildings and identify which tenant spaces would have frontage and which tenant spaces this restriction could apply to. So when we use the term frontage, we're considering anything that has directly faces the public street or directly faces a parking lot that has frontage on that public street, so West State Street or North or South 3rd Street. But we're not including those spaces on the first floor that might be behind another tenant space that has that actual frontage. It might have access through a corridor, but it does not have the actual frontage on the street or the parking lot. So we identified all the properties shown in orange here are those tenant spaces that don't have that direct frontage. They're on properties that front on State Street, but they're tenant spaces that don't have that frontage on State or 3rd Street. So walking through those maps, what's shown on the screen now are the building footprints, the tenant spaces that the restriction, as we're recommending now, would apply to. So then we did an inventory of all the existing offices shown here in green that are located on the first floor in that area. We have just a handful, an inventory of all the banks, again, just a handful, an inventory of vacant spaces. These, again, aren't offices or banks now, but because they're vacant under the current regulations, they could become an office or a bank tomorrow if they wanted to. And then we also looked at our surface parking lots in this study area that also contribute to that break in continuity or that dead zone. So we have just a handful of each, but when you put them all together, you can see that we have some significant gaps. Just for the sake of clarity, I colored them all orange on this map. The ring shown with the dotted blue line is that quarter-mile radius from State Street and 3rd Street. All the orange is the non-retail dead zones. I'm trying to highlight here that we do have those short 300-foot blocks that make this a very walkable retail environment. And what this map really shows, I think, is that the core around 3rd Street and West State Street is strong. We do have some significant gaps kind of starting here at City Hall and going east towards the river with the parking lot and then some vacancies. Right now on 3rd Street and State Street, we have some vacancies there. But then going west, especially once you get to 5th Street, we have some greater gaps there. This is just another way of representing that information. I tried to show those gaps with the dotted break in the dark blue lines. So then just very quickly, our recommendations at this point would be to make amendments to our permitted use list in the B2 district to allow banks and offices above or below ground floor only for properties that front on 3rd Street and for properties that front on West State Street between River Lane and 7th Street. And we would also recommend defining the term frontage just so it's clear which tenant spaces that restriction would apply to. And finally, we would look at our non-conforming regulations and add a fourth number there to accept existing bank and office uses from our non-conforming provisions, which would allow them to kind of continue indefinitely and grandfather them in. So that's where we've been since October. At this point, again, we're not seeking a recommendation from the Committee of the Whole. We're just asking for your direction to advance this initiative, to engage the business community and get their input, and then eventually get to the point where we can present this in a Plan Commission public hearing.
Comments?
Questions?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. David, when we talked about it at the planning meeting or the discussion meeting, I know I was totally against it, and I prefer the encouraged or how we were doing it or let the market dictate. But I'm going to vote for it because sending it to the Plan Commission for a public hearing is way better than just one person's opinion. So I'm going to change that. Thank you.
Alderman Brown?
Alderman Hill had his hand up first.
Go ahead, I've been talking.
I defer to the better dancer.
Turn to talk.
Well, we don't know yet, do we?
We don't.
In your non-conforming, the additional regulation about non-conforming, it said that the non-conformance would expire if the building was not continuously used as a bank. What about if the bank is sold to a different bank, which appears to be occurring about once every 3 months
right.
in the city?
The exception would allow for that to occur?
This creates a special class of property, a property that is allowed to be a bank as long as it continues to be a bank, and I have a little bit of a problem with that. I can see allowing a grandfathering existing, but allowing the property to acquire a special right as opposed to its neighbors, to me, I would hope that that could be discussed at these meetings. There is a difference between grandfathering the present use and grandfathering a continuous use. It makes a special case for that particular storefront. Thank you.
Alderman Hill.
And my question, Dave, would be how soon do you think that this process would be put in place officially? So let's say somebody who is already got an office up on the second floor, but they want to add something to the first floor with other amenities that would be good for the public. I don't know if they'd qualify or not, but how soon do you think that this process might go into place?
Well, our first step would be to engage the business community, whether that's in the property owners' meetings or merchants' meetings, through mailers, through our website. We'd do the initial public outreach. I would give that probably a few months. Then we would digest the input we received from the community and then schedule the Plan Commission public hearing. I would, conservatively, I would say late spring before we would even get to a Plan Commission public hearing.
Fine. Thank you very much.
Any other comments, questions? From the audience. Gene, if you want. Going to need name. You know the routine.
Gene Gaines, Geneva Chamber of Commerce, 8 South 3rd Street. Actually, Alderman Hill called me today to alert me to this, and I guess now is the time to ask the question. Perhaps most of you know that we are opening an extension of the chamber on the first floor called the Geneva Visitor Center. And I guess I have to ask you, what do you think we are? We won't, it isn't an office necessarily, but it also isn't a retailer. We may have some souvenirs, but our main function will be to give information to the general public and visitors who are coming to town, making reservations at hotels or restaurants. It's going to be a real service to the rest of the retail community. So I was served on the long-range master plan. I support this. I think it's a good goal to maintain retail in downtown, but there's always an exception, and now I'm saying, what are we, and are we an exception?
Do it quickly, and we can grandmother you. Excuse me, grandfather you.
Well, we want to set a good example and do it the right way, however, so that's why I'm raising the question tonight, and you might not even have an answer tonight, but we did lease the property, or rent, I should say, the property as of last November with a five-year lease, so it would be very disappointing to find out we couldn't do what we planned to do. And we haven't applied for any permits yet because we can't start the process until March.
And we did discuss the chamber specifically.
Thank you.
Yeah, so, but I'm not sure exactly how, where it fell, but you can work with the...
David, isn't it that she's got the lease signed right now for that use? Yeah. Is that going to do it or
right,
or
I
not?
Think those are some of the details we'd those work are the out details with the public involvement. But
we're still working
existing
out.
Existing uses would, again, be grandfathered in kind of indefinitely under this proposal at least. If we have documentation that shows leases signed prior to the adoption date of any ordinance restricting those uses, I think we would have to honor those.
And that's... Those are the items that really come up in the public meetings and stuff, so that we work all of that out. Again, this isn't the this is probably not going to be what we finally see after we talk to the business owners. It gets through the Plan Commission. I mean, there's always adjustments and tweaking made to that. So that's the time and place that we do all of that. But I appreciate your comments. And you're pretty much going to be at this point. You've got a signed lease. David has pretty much said that that's probably pretty much going to keep it at you have an agreement already grandfathered in, at least the way we see it now.
Evening all. Mike Bruno, 522 Fulton Street. For clarity, the other downtown business districts, B3, B6, does that already preclude first floor banks and office?
The B3 district does have a provision there that restricts office uses and bank uses from fronting on 3rd Street.
Okay.
They're allowed on side streets, but not on 3rd Street on the first floor. The B6 is our planned unit developments. For example, Dotson Place is a planned unit development. We do have restrictions on the percentage of floor area that the first floor can be dedicated to office spaces or medical uses. So they are allowed in Dotson Place, but only up to a certain percentage.
Great, thanks. And as far as not crossing the river into that nearby B2 district, I mean, we're spending a lot of money on trying to extend downtown. I think I would disagree on excluding that in terms of pedestrian continuity for... To try and grow that side of the river to get some critical mass. And we've kind of screwed the pooch on at 5th and State in terms of banks on the two corners, and I'd hate to see another wall put up at on the other side of the river. And we've already got the obstacle of a hill. So, thanks.
Mm-hmm. Any other comments, questions? All right. Just remember what we're voting on tonight is not the final you know, ordinance it is just to move it. Alderman Flanagan, did you have something?
I'm sorry. Just was wondering if there was, I mean, like Dotson Place has the percentage. Has anybody thought of putting a percentage of banks and offices?
Those were some ideas we explored initially. When you do it's quantitative zoning, when you look at percentages,
I didn't know if it was legal or
linear
not.
Linear feet
so.
of frontage of a property, it's much easier to do when you have one property owner, but when you have multiple property owners sharing a block face, it becomes really difficult to enforce all the time.
Okay, thank you.
Good question. Any other questions? Remember, this is just to forward it to a public hearing and for them to get feedback from the business and residential communities in regards to this. So if there are no other questions, we will take it to a vote. All those in favor, say aye.
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 Any opposed? That does go unanimously. So.
Thank you.
Next item on the agenda is item 4J. Recommend draft resolution authorizing execution of easement agreement with Geneva School District 304 to bury electric lines on west side of Burgess Field.
So move.
Motion by Alderman Flanagan.
Second.
Second by Alderman Singer. Comments, questions? Alderman Brown.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I think I have a question for
Mr. Dinges.
Mr. Dinges, in place of Mr. Bovington. I live very close to that district, a so-called Sansoni subdivision, and the power lines are in the backyards for all of those blocks in that neighborhood. Does this represent the first gambit in an effort by the city to bury the lines in that whole district?
I don't think it's for the whole area. We just have been experiencing a lot of outages in that area from tree limbs taking out the power lines, and so it was in need of maintenance, and if you're going to maintain it, we're thinking put it on the ground rather than keep it overhead.
Traditionally, as you well know, there's been very aggressive tree trimming in that whole neighborhood. I've had a number of trees given a real crew cut in my backyard. Is there any cost-benefit analysis as to this particular set of six houses that represents a very small fraction of this neighborhood is going to give us a benefit that pays back in the long run? Otherwise, I don't see why we're separating them out to get special treatment.
Because of the experience that we had, we feel that it does make sense to put it underground. However, the services will still be above ground going to the houses unless the residents want to pay for it, because that's a private cost. And then the phone cable at this point aren't in a position to put it underground. The poles will still be there, so it's not like we're eliminating poles. It's just we have a need to replace a line, and if we can put it underground for relatively the same amount, we feel that it's better to put it underground to avoid outages in the future.
So it's not that much more expensive to?
No.
Thank you. I will vote for it.
Any other questions from the dais, from the audience? Any questions? Hearing none, seeing none. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye.
Any opposed? It's unanimous. Yeah. Next item on the agenda is item 4K, recommend draft resolution authorizing execution of parking lot lease with First Baptist Church for temporary commuter parking during 3rd Street parking deck construction.
So move.
Motion by Alderman Singer.
Second.
Second by Alderman. Questions?
I wanted to find out whether he said something we should.
Alderman Singer.
Yeah, I'm led to believe that the project is close to $3.5 million, and the leasing of the parking area is $1,700. That is inclusive of the $3.5 million, so there's no outgrowth of funds coming from our city to pay for this cost of parking. There's going to be enough space there, Danny, to park all those cars?
We anticipate that the majority of commuters are going to utilize LaFox or West Chicago, because they're not going to want to add to their commute by having to take a bus. But we're providing the First Baptist Church and the baseball field parking next to Public Works as an option, similar to what we did when we built the parking deck initially. We had those two lots available. It didn't get used all that much back then, but it's an option so that if the stations, the other stations get full, people still have an option to be able to park and be able to take we're trying to work with Pace right now where there would not be a fee for the commuters to take the bus.
Okay.
The city will be paying for, well, the city through Metro funding will be paying for the bus service.
Do you have any idea when the project's going to have a starting date?
I've been trying to figure that out. I talked to both Pace and Metro today. The biggest thing is, one, we're opening bids on January 31st. So there we'll have a low bidder. However, it's got to go to Metro and the RTA. And I found out from there it's got to go to IDOT in Springfield for approval. And nobody can tell me time frame of when that will get approval. But at the rate that they're going, I wouldn't be surprised if I'm standing here next year. But I'm hopeful that it'll be this spring because the Pace timing, they have dates on when you can start bus service, new bus service. April 8th is the one that I'm shooting for. However, based on my conversation with Metro today, that's probably going to be doubtful, which means the next one would be the first week in June. So we might be looking at the June time frame, but I'm going to push for the April if we can.
Okay. Thank you, Danny. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
You're welcome. Alderman Hill. This is certainly going to increase the automobile traffic on South Street, which is understandable. I would just hope that the speed limits that are mounted on the posts on South Street are adhered to and that the police department will help enforce them, because we don't want to turn that into a speedway like it is once in a while. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Welcome. Anyone else? Anyone from the audience? Well, I guess we can go to the vote then. All those in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Any opposed? We've gotten through everything unanimously tonight. Here, you can have an easy job next
week. Thank you,
sir.
Just let you know I did that.
You get to explain it. Come to probably one of the most scariest part of the meetings. New business. You never know what's going to come up. Alderman Singer.
Yeah.
Jimmy failing nothing.
Danny. Danny, I'm going to put you on the carpet again. I believe Alderman Flanagan and I received an email regarding the sidewalk on the southeast side of Williamsburg between the school and the intersection where the kids cross. It's covered with ice. Is there any way we can see to it that is salted, or do we not have the provisions for that? That's part of the SSA, is it not, to have that maintained?
It's a marked school crossing, so I will make sure that it gets salted.
Okay.
We maintain the crossings that have a crossing guard.
Right.
Other than that, we haven't been maintaining those, so I'll make sure that we address that.
Okay. Thank you for that. I'm sure Alderman Flanagan thanks you as well.
I thank him. We all thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Ms. McKittrick, do you have some?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I just wanted to remind the council and our viewing audience that next Monday's meeting is on Tuesday due to the Martin Luther King holiday. Thank you.
You're welcome. Anyone else with new business for the dais? Anyone from the audience with any new business? All right, we'll close that area. The upcoming meeting, next committee of the whole meeting, is January 28th, as Mary has just informed us. Remember, next week the council meeting is on Tuesday night, where the mayor will have a nice, easy job. unless something comes up. So, next item on the agenda, a motion for adjournment.
So moved.
Alderman Flanagan makes a motion.
I guess we're staying here.
Alderman Hill makes a second. I thought we were going to just stick this one on. All those in favor, say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Any opposed?
Aye.
Meeting is adjourned.
8:35.
Yeah. Not bad, man. Not bad for all that.